Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Moline. Coming up later this hour...
There's more deserving people who are in the Federal Bureau of Prisons who could use relief from this president other than Rob Blagojevich.
That's Illinois House GOP leader Jim Durkin reacting to the news yesterday that President Trump commuted the prison sentence of former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich. We'll find out how Illinois officials on both sides of the aisle are reacting to that news with Illinois Public Radio State House reporter Brian Mackey. But first, current Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker delivers his annual budget address to the General Assembly today. In just a bit, some people involved in education will tell us what they'll be listening for in the governor's speech. Right now, what does Illinois' fiscal situation look like after the first year of J.B. Pritzker's administration? And how does it compare to what he inherited from his predecessor, Bruce Rauner? Here to discuss that with us is Amanda Cass. She's the Associate Director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois Chicago. Amanda, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us is Lawrence Massal. He's the president of the Civic Federation, an independent, nonpartisan government research organization that provides analysis and recommendations on government finance issues for the Chicago region and the state of Illinois. Lawrence, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
My first question is for both of you. Lawrence, we'll start with you. As we talk here today, how would you rate the fiscal health of the state of Illinois right now and compared to where it was a year ago?
I think a fair assessment of the state of Illinois' fiscal health would be that it is stable. Unfortunately, it is stable at a very low level, so we have one of the worst rated credits in the United States of any state. But it has shown improvement from where it was in the previous years in that Governor Pritzker was able to get a budget passed within the requisite time during the previous fiscal year and get the legislature to approve it with some bipartisan support. So things have stabilized for the state of Illinois. Unfortunately, the condition, the credit rating, the large number of unpaid bills of over $7 billion is still very much a problem for not just the vendors of the state, but anybody who relies on the state of Illinois for services or anybody who's impacted by the services they provide.
And Amanda, same question to you. You know, how would you rate the fiscal health of the state right now and compared to where it was a year ago?
I'm in large agreement with Lawrence. I think Illinois has stabilized. It's a bit kind of treading water in terms of its finances. And I think part of the important context is that prior to Governor Pritzker, in his first budget, the state went several years without a budget. It created a lot of problems for the state's finances in terms of a very large backlog of unpaid bills, cuts to services. And so I think the state has had a big hole to dig itself out of. So while it's stable, it's still not a kind of 180 turnaround.
Sure. The upcoming budget year starting July 1st will be an interesting one. You know, the governor is a big advocate for the graduated income tax, which will go before voters this fall as a constitutional amendment. But even if that passes, any additional revenue from that proposal wouldn't be available until next year at the earliest. Lawrence, as you look at the upcoming fiscal year, how do you think the governor and General Assembly will try to navigate some of the fiscal challenges the state faces in the upcoming budget year?
I think the governor is going to try to approach on a two-pronged path. That is, he wants to build, as he says, a bridge to the graduated income tax vote in November. His proposal, which will be before the voters in November, would increase state revenues by about $3.7 billion. But as you point out, it won't be available for this fiscal year, and for the one coming up, they can at best expect to get some money in the second half of the fiscal year. As a result, it's somewhat surprising, or not surprising, that the projected deficit, according to the governor's Office of Management and Budget, is that they have about a $1.7 billion projected fiscal year 21 deficit. That's an enormous amount of spending to be out of balance, and that's spending pressure. So the governor is going to, at noon today, lay out his proposal to present a balanced budget that only relies on available revenue for the state of Illinois. The state law requires the governor to propose a budget with known revenue, not things in the future. Previous governors have gotten around that a little bit by presenting two different paths, whether when they were promoting a tax increase. It's expected that Governor Pritzker will have at least some language in there that points out how much better things would be with the graduated income tax if they had that revenue. But the actual budget that he will be presenting is required to be balanced under the state constitution, at least to the best of his ability to propose a balanced budget. So I think it will be a difficult task for the governor today to balance both where he wants the state of Illinois to go and what resources he has to apply to the state of Illinois today.
Amanda, speaking of the graduated income tax, most, if not all, Republicans are against this proposal, and many of them have used the slippery slope argument that once the graduated tax amendment passes, that it will be easier for lawmakers to raise income taxes across all income levels in the state. And I know you've been doing some research into this question. What have you found?
Yeah, so I've been working on that exact question with my colleague, David Merriman, and we've been putting together data on state income tax policy across the 50 states and looking at this question of, is it the case that states with graduated structures change their tax rates more often than states with flat structures? And our preliminary analysis, and I want to emphasize that it's preliminary, indicates that that's not the case. We're still looking at the question more, but right now we don't find evidence that states with graduated rates have tax increases or tax changes more generally more often than states with flat taxes. Preliminary analysis is on the Government Finance Research Center's website if anyone wants to look at it more.
All right, great. We certainly can't discuss Illinois' finances without mentioning public pensions. And one reason Democrats have been pushing for additional revenue is because of the rising amount of contributions the state is making to those pensions. Amanda, can you just give us a quick summary of the current pension situation here in Illinois?
Sure. So Illinois has some of the most underfunded pension systems in the United States. Collectively, the five pension systems are only about 40% funded, meaning that for every $1 of a pension liability, the state right now only has 40 cents in the bank. To get the level of funding up, the state has a funding plan that's supposed to get the systems to 90% funded by 2045. But to do that, the state's contributions each year to the pension systems are going to have to increase on average by about 3% from year to year. So making the payments is an ongoing fiscal pressure for the state.
And Lawrence, could you give us just a little bit of the backstory here? How did we get to where we are with the current pension situation, with the pensions being so underfunded and this increasing contribution from the state?
So Illinois got to this place where it has now, as was pointed out, over $130 billion. And those are just the state pension funds. That doesn't include the police and fire or the municipal pension funds or county pension funds. These are just the state employees. Basically, the path for all of the funds has been the same. The state established pension funds and then did not require actuarial contributions to those funds. Historically, the state, before 1995, basically put money into the state pension funds according to what was left over when the General Assembly had finished prioritizing other spending. In 1995, the state went on a 50-year plan to get to 90% funding. It was expected that that would be a floor for funding of the pension funds. It ended up being the ceiling for which the state contributes its pension funds. At the same time, the state was under contributing to the pension funds. It was adding benefits, increasing benefits, and it established in the 1980s an automatic 3% compounded increase for the pensioners that happens regardless of the rate of inflation. That's probably one of the single most expensive benefits Illinois has that no other state has, a 3% statutorily provided and compounded benefit. The state legislature has tried to reverse that. They passed legislation to diminish that 3% compounded for existing employees and retirees. The Illinois Supreme Court ruled that they could not do that. The court did not provide much direction for what the state could do to bring down that enormous amount. And so the various other ideas have been floated, including changing the state constitution, including bargaining with the employees to accept a lesser benefit than that. Those things have had a very uneven path in the General Assembly. So as Amanda points out, you basically have to keep putting more and more money in these state pension funds just to keep them from running out of money. The governor had a commission last year, Governor Pritzker, to look at consolidating the local police and fire pension funds. That commission ended up only recommending the consolidation of the investment oversight of those funds. It's expected to have some significant savings, but not as much as many would like. The other area that was not included was the city of Chicago and their pension funds, or the Chicago Public Schools, which is the only school district in Illinois that operates its own pension system. So there are a lot of areas the General Assembly and the governor could be working on for pension consolidation, and there's hope that before the legislature adjourns, that there will be things that the General Assembly and governor agree on that could provide some property tax relief. Because without any property tax relief, going to the voters in November with a very large income tax increase creates the risk that there may not be as much support as the proponents would hope.
Yeah. Amanda, I wanted to ask you a couple things that Lawrence just mentioned here. You know, he mentioned the state combining hundreds of smaller pension funds for public safety workers into one larger fund. I know you've done some research into this as well. You know, is that a good idea? How much will this actually help in the grand scheme of things?
I think in the abstract, consolidation makes a lot of sense. What Illinois did is not full consolidation. As Lawrence said, what's going to happen is that the assets of the local police and fire pension systems are going to be pooled together and invested, and that's anticipated to save some savings and potentially create some property tax relief. But there's costs to transitioning from having 650 plus individual funds that manage their own assets to combining them. So I think that the savings are more long-term and there's going to be some upfront costs. So I'm a little cautious on what kind of relief that's going to provide in the short term.
Sure. And one other thing the governor proposed last year, Amanda, was extending the time frame of that so-called pension ramp. Lawrence mentioned, you know, a 90% funding level by the year 2045. What did the governor propose last year, and what ended up happening there?
Right. So he proposed extending the timeline, which would have it saved money in the short term. It creates relief in the current budget and for the next few years, but extending out the timeline costs the state more money in the long term. It was also looked very unfavorably upon by the credit rating agencies, so they kind of walked away from that idea, at least for now. Another item that the governor has talked about in the past, and I'm still waiting to hear about, is this asset transfer. So the idea is to transfer one of the state's assets to the state pension systems, which would boost the finances of the pension systems. It's kind of like a injection of cash all at once into the pension systems. They put together a task force on that issue, but I haven't seen anything lately. So I'm going to be looking at the governor's budget to see if there's anything to that in it.
Just a couple of minutes left here. I want to ask you both what specific things you'll be listening for from the governor today. Lawrence, let's start with you.
Well, so ideally, we'd like to hear from the governor his plan for moving Illinois forward and certainly to not move backward. The governor, in a preview of his budget, said he was going to increase funding for the Department of Children and Family Services by about $140 million. Between around $150 to $170 million. That's a significant amount of money, and they technically may have that surplus because the governor has done some department consolidations, or will be proposing some department consolidations and some other efficiencies. The bigger question is how, if the graduated income tax doesn't pass in November, what's plan B for the state of Illinois? How will the state be able to pay its bills? It has a large amount of debt outstanding. It has a large amount of unfunded pension liabilities that will continue to grow. And even with a graduated income tax that the governor proposes, those pressures are going to continue to exist. So what we're looking for is how will the governor steer the state financially, and what impact will that have on the local governments? The big pressure for property taxes relief is coming because in many parts of the state of Illinois, there is the perception that home values are declining at the same time property taxes are increasing, and that is a very negative impact.
Sure. Amanda, about 30 seconds. How about you? What are you listening for?
Well, in addition to the things that Lawrence just mentioned, I think the two big things I'm going to be listening for are what the governor has to say about pensions, if there's any mention about the asset transfer, and if he has any remarks about property taxes. While property taxes aren't part of the state budget, they're, of course, a huge issue for the local governments.
Amanda Cass with the University of Illinois Chicago, Lawrence Massol, president of the Civic Federation. Thanks so much for both of you joining us here on the 21st.
Thank you.